VentureCast.
There's a change happening in the way we live, the way we work, the way we spend our money and make our decisions. We are evolving to be more conscious in our actions in a way that serves the world and makes it a better place. Welcome to The Ethical Evolution. The Ethical Evolution podcast is brought to you by the Ethical Change Agency. I'm Bindi, CEO and founder, and I am honoured to bring you the stories of those who create change through paying it forward and giving back. Ethical business owners and holistic healers who are determined to create collective change in the world. Once we have a change in consciousness and through collective change, we can become one. When I stumbled across my next guest, I knew that it was yet another example of how there are no coincidences. And I think on some levels, I'll be hard pushed to find a greater spiritual alignment in these discussions. Betty J. Kovacs, PhD, earned her doctorate from the University of California in comparative literature and theory of symbolic mythic language. She taught literature, writing, and symbolic mythic language for 25 years. She served many years as chair and program chair on the board of directors of the Jung Society of Claremont in California and sits on the academic advisory board of Forever Family Foundation. Dr. Kovacs is author of Merchants of Light, The Consciousness That is Changing the World, winner of the Nautilus Silver Book Award. She has also written The Miracle of Death, There is Nothing But Life. I found my time with Betty absolutely fascinating when we dove into the synchronicities of our lives and the visions and messages we receive. I hope you gain some enlightenment from listening to Betty's story. Welcome, Betty, to The Ethical Evolution.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Now, for people who don't know you, can you tell us who you are and what you do?
Well, it's difficult to explain who we are, isn't it?
Yes.
But I think that I could probably do that best by saying what has driven me all my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that I was born into the Western world, as millions of us were. And that meant I was born into a worldview that there's nothing but matter. There's no meaning, no purpose. We're a fluke of nature. And when we're dead, that's it. That's mm-hmm. the end of the game. And in growing up with that, I constantly had this horrible sense of emptiness. And I kept thinking, there's surely more than that. But after all, if you have science, you know, that's the authority. But I really didn't, there's something deep in me that couldn't accept that. But I had no information. Then there was another worldview from organized religion that said, oh no, there's a world of love and beauty and continuation of consciousness. But I had to believe what someone else said was true. These organized religions were not based on initiating my own inner experience. So that was my problem. And the only way I could really pursue an answer was to go to university. And of course, there I had the materialistic worldview enforced, you might say. And if you were intelligent at all, of course you went along with that. But I just couldn't accept it. And so I would say that most of my life has been a pursuit of my own understanding of the world. And I did that by studying science. And I mean, I'm not a scientist, but I did the best I could with it. And religions and spiritual traditions that also took me to South America twice to study with shamans. But ultimately, it was the deaths in my family that opened me up far more than had happened before through even shamanic practices. But it was these deaths that just cracked open the world. And my visionary life really began intensely at that point so that I could experience for myself.
Yeah, and I'm absolutely fascinated by shamanic traditions and their beliefs and all of that, because when you compare it to, you know, traditional religions, it is a very holistic kind of view, isn't it? Like they take into account, you know, nature and everything, rather than just this set of beliefs. Yeah, I find it really fascinating. What did you get out of studying that?
Well, you know, first of all, yes, that exactly what you say is what appealed to me. First of all, there is no set of beliefs or doctrines. Mm. And the universe is so vast, they say, that each of us experiences a part of it. Mm. But they also, it does seem as though we certainly experience those organizing principles in the universe that are organized so that we can evolve in a way that we can all evolve and understand that we are all one, that there's one mind. And I love the ethical change that you have in your program, because it is the most ethical experience when we experience these principles, because of course they activate the heart consciousness and we realize the true nature, you might say, of the universe, and that it is structured in such a way that there is the blueprint within us to evolve. And we realize if I do harm to you, I have really done harm to myself.
That's it.
So, yeah, the ethical way of life is an absolute natural once we catch on that, yes, we're all one in this, and that we receive that loving universe through the heart consciousness.
Yeah, and well, perfect alignment for us, isn't it, you know, with the mission of what I do and what you also do. So perfect alignment. Now, you've got a couple of books out, don't you? Can you tell us about those?
Yes, the first book was written after the deaths in my family. My mother was killed in an automobile accident in 1990. And the next year, my son, our only child, was killed in a second automobile accident.
Wow.
And he was in a trauma center for 13 days. And strangely, one of those synchronistic events was that on the day that my mother had died, the year before, that very day and that same hour, the doctor said, "We will take him off of the machines because he won't make it." And it was exactly same day, same hour as my mother the year before.
Wow.
Then 2 years and 4 months later, my husband Istvan was in his home country, Hungary, to visit his family, and he was killed in a third automobile accident.
No way.
So it was, but the wonderful thing about all of this was that I had done the shamanic training and I had started having experiences of my own. My husband had not. He was a businessman and he was kind and was respectful of me, but it wasn't his interest. But 2 weeks before our son was killed, he saw the accident. He was in his office here at home, and he saw Pishti, our son's car, off the side of the freeway, and he saw our son's body superimposed on it, and he knew he was dead because it was two different dimensions, one superimposed on the other. And he said, oh, that's right. It's almost time for you to do this. And that startled him so badly.
Wow.
Where did that come from? He thought. And then our son said, "That's right, Dad. I'll be out of the house for a little while." Then he became totally unconscious until the call came from the hospital. We happened to both be here that afternoon, which was unusual.
Mm.
And then it came back, but he didn't tell me until later. But at any rate, there were his visions began. I realized 2 years before our son's death, I had been dreaming of his death, but I looked at it in a symbolic way. So this book, it's The Miracle of Death, There Is Nothing But Life, is about the experiences that we had. We recorded them immediately.
Mm.
And so I tried to be very, very accurate in my reporting of all of these visions with our son after his death. And that changed me forever. And it did my husband too. I mean, he was really a changed man because he had no idea. In fact, he said to me, "I had no idea what you were talking about, but I will never look at the earth in the same way again."
Wow, that is
so. That's the first book.
That's the first book, yeah. And what was your second one?
Yeah, the second one. The second one. Then I continued my research about these kinds of experiences. And I wanted to know, what about our ancestors? What was their experience? I had studied religions, but I wanted to know about the actual spiritual tradition of the shamans in our past. And so the book, Merchants of Light, The Consciousness That Is Changing the World, really is a historical presentation of the earliest shamanic activity. Of course, it all happened very spontaneously around the world, around 40,000 BCE. So I take the journey from the cave cultures all the way through quite a few very profound shamanic, mystic, and in some cases, scientific cultures. And this was our natural development. It went in a very natural way, but sometimes it was history that destroyed them, just things that happened. But most of the time, it was either politics, the state, or the church, organized religion that did not want that taking place. Here, people were actually experiencing for themselves the realities in the universe, and that was not to be. So they were destroyed again and again. But the thing that I realized is that in European history, they came back four times. There were four periods of Renaissance in which these shamanic traditions re-emerged and ignited consciousness. And it was the fifth time is today. But so I tell all of that in the book, how each Renaissance period was actually the re-emergence of that shamanic tradition. So that's the second book, Merchants of Light, The Consciousness That Is Changing the World.
Wow. Got to read those because sounds absolutely fascinating. And isn't it interesting, you know, I'm noticing through doing this podcast and speaking to so many people around the world that there is an evolution happening, and whether it be ethical, whether it be spiritual, there is an evolution happening. I think some of us are starting to wake up and realize there's more to this than what we thought. Are you finding that?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I have said that this is the fifth Renaissance in Western history, is that these shamanic cultures, I was so amazed when I started doing deeper research than I had been able to do when I was teaching, is that in the 20th century, scholars unconnected to each other had discovered these cultures that we didn't even know about. And the depth of their spirituality and their ability to trigger altered states of consciousness, cosmic or Christ consciousness. It was so amazing to me to realize that these cultures had existed. Well, isn't it rather synchronistic that so many were discovered in the 20th century? And I think also in the 20th century, we have quantum physics, which completely shows that the old worldview is inaccurate. And that is so important for us to have a history, a science that is worthy of the universe, or at least it's beginning to be, because it recognizes many dimensions of reality, or the quantum field, or the one mind, or that consciousness creates the universe. And when the matter is no longer, consciousness that created it continues to exist. So all of this happened in the 20th century. And so, yes, I think that there is a tremendous awakening happening. And at the same time, we have some of the darkest forces within ourselves, our species, that would like to always, when we don't go inward, we want to control the outer world. And so there always is that, if in the undeveloped, I would say, there is that necessity to control others. And I think that's very strong right now around the world. And we have to recognize it for what it is. But we have to, it's so important that we know we have the power. We have that inner power to deal with that illness within our species.
Yeah, it's so true. And, you know, just when you were telling me about, you know, the visions and the synchronicity in what happened in your life, I think, you know, for me, every day it just becomes crystal clear that, you know, there are no coincidences. You know, the universe has everything planned out exactly as it's meant to happen. And like, and even the bad things that we see happening around the world, they're all necessary. They're all there for a purpose. And it's just something I really want to shed more light on for people because, you know, unless you're awake to it, you just don't see it. And I just find it absolutely fascinating when things happen, you go, oh, yep, that was meant to happen, you know. So
well, and you see the synchronicity of it. And it's so funny that after my husband died, I had also visions with him. And I had tried to complete Merchants of Light much earlier. And Kim, you've talked with Kim, my editor and publisher, we tried to do everything. We thought that book was going to be out much earlier, but it came out exactly at the right time. Mm. And we were able to launch it in the UK. And when we came back, we were really discovering about the virus and the shutdown and so on. But my book is, there were several visions that really inspired the book. And that is a vision of my husband's in which he was talked to by our son about the decay, that we needed to work on what had decayed. As a matter of fact, he told him to look up a particular hexagram. And when he looked that up, it was 18, working on what has decayed.
Wow.
And so after I finished the first book, I thought, okay, I'm going to throw the I Ching and just see, because I knew I wanted to work on this, but I didn't exactly know what path to take. And so I threw the I Ching. I got exactly the same thing, 18, work on what has decayed. So I realized all the way through that this is a time when we are becoming conscious and must become conscious of the decay that has been brought about in the world by our not going inward and discovering that we are Christ. We have the potential. We are divine if we allow ourselves to become that. And that might seem strange to say, but I love that Jesus in the Nag Hammadi text said, I am not your master. When you drink from my lips, you and I are one. Mm. And the Nag Hammadi Jesus made it very clear that he wanted us to remember who we are. He didn't come to die for sins. No, he came to awaken us to who we are, that we are not to follow him, but to become the Christ. And I think when we realize that, everything changes.
Yeah, so true. Just going back to what you recounted in your first book and you know, with people passing away, can you shed a bit of light for us on life after death and what experiences you've had there?
From a personal point of view, I could certainly say that both my husband and I, and Pishti's girlfriend, experienced him after his death. And her experiences really did help her. She was 19 and he was 20. And so her experiences helped her very much. Ishvan and I had profound experiences in which, first of all, Pishti wanted us to remember that why we had chosen to come at this time, to remember that consciousness continues. And how incredibly misguided we have become with a worldview that didn't understand that. And so he wanted us to remember that. And then our conversations were about what the world was going through at this time and how the earth was attempting to give birth to a vaster consciousness. And so that would, my personal experience was that. Of course, it was also healing to be with our son actually and realize what he was working on. And I think this is our heritage. This is the way it should be. It shouldn't be that when someone dies, we feel that we've lost them and we can't know what's going on. Of course we should know, and that heals us. And so I was so grateful to have that experience because it changed everything. Now, the Sufis, for example, have worked very diligently to be able to enter this subtle world or spirit world. And they are even called the cartographers of that world because they have actually traveled in the many dimensions of that world. I think of Jesus saying, in my house are many mansions, in my Father's house are many mansions. There are many aspects to it. And people who have died and have been able to get in contact with people have talked about the many dimensions of the other world. But there's no question that consciousness survives. And they would say, they teach us that through the heart, through the organ of soul, the heart, we can be in touch with that world, and that everything that is created here exists in that world. And when the matter no longer exists, it continues to exist in the subtle world. So the Sufis knew long ago that consciousness continues, and that we continue to create in a way that we have achieved an ability here to do so. And there are so many people working with us both here and on the other side to help us to create the worlds that we long for.
Yeah, and I think it can really help people to look at death a different way, particularly, if they've lost someone that they really love. It's having that separation between the physical and the consciousness, and understanding that they'll always be there, regardless of whatever form.
Yes, and it's so hard because even I know people who know very well that consciousness continues and that the person they love who passed into the other world is still alive, but they can't deal with that separation of not being in the physical world together. I think that we can do that better when we have the visionary experience with them. Then we can. And I think of the poet, German poet Rilke, saying that the organs with which we could have perceived them have atrophied because our culture said there was nothing to perceive. There's nothing there. It's all nothing. And so we have atrophied organs, I think. And I think that's one of the most important things we can do today. First of all, just as we are talking about it, telling our stories, and then developing techniques so that we can experience the people we love once they have stepped out of the material world, because that way we can survive. We can we have to recreate a world without them, but we can do that better if we know they're in the other world working with us.
And what would you recommend to people to develop that connection and get those visions?
You know, I wish I had some real magic secrets to tell. I think that, first of all, as I've said, it's our heritage. We all have the organ of soul, as the Sufis said, the heart. And there are probably many techniques, certainly that our ancestors had, of dancing, of chanting, using sacred plants that was used for tens of thousands of years. And I think, isn't that interesting that sacred plants existed on the planet, and that helped us to, that our relationship with the plant would help us to be in contact with. It's again a relationship with nature that we can have a vision. But there, I think that we need to remember those techniques, and we need also to develop new ones. And certainly every single one of us can be in a place where we focus on our heart and on the people we love. And just with that openness of heart and breathing, we can take ourselves into a coherent state. And heart math has done so much scientific research on that, and people can get in touch with that organization, Heart Math. And you can even buy a little device that I think you clip to your finger or your ear, and you just breathe deeply, and you begin to realize, oh, I'm coherent. That means all systems working together. We have not done, because we've said there's nothing but the rational mind, and we've cut ourselves off from the symbolic brain and the heart. And so this is a way of kind of, even with a little device, which our culture loves, you can kind of watch, but you can kind of know it if you don't have that. Just to breathe deeply and focus on the heart and on the love that we've experienced in our lives and are experiencing, and our relationship to nature. It's that, I think, is simple, and all of us can do it. But I also think that together we're going to develop techniques that work, and we don't have to wait a lifetime for them to work. You know, this, I think, is a necessity of our age to invigorate those atrophied organs and get them working again.
Yeah, so it's really our time to shine, isn't it? Like I know you've been talking about ancestral, it's almost like a degradation over time, isn't it, where they lose that connection with spirit and the greater consciousness. And, you know, as generations go on, it becomes even weaker. And I think, you know, this is our time to step up and actually take ownership of that.
Yes. And when we think of Indigenous people in Australia or around the world, many of them have been able to keep that connection, but it's very hard because Western culture has gone all around the world making fun of and criticizing and in our ignorance not knowing that we're destroying the very heart of ourselves. But I do think that the respect, if we can learn to respect others and allow them to teach us, you know, that I know my husband had a vision in which in his early vision, actually with our son, but he said that he was in nature and he had a sense of respect, but he said, it's nothing like I ever experienced before. It was respect for everything, everyone, for every blade of grass. And he said, I realized that everything became sacred because I could see it with this respect. And I realized that love grows out of that respect. And it reminded me of Indigenous people talking to the plants and asking permission, that deep respect for everything in nature and himself and everyone else. You know, when we can begin to have that feeling, then we can only behave ethically, you know?
Yeah. Imagine a world like that, huh? Imagine that.
I know. I know, and it seems our ancestors had insight into that.
And, you know, if we tap into that, it is such a beautiful feeling, you know, to tap into that sacred connection with everything. You know, we've become so flippant with everything in our lives, you know, right down to the blades of grass, that we've just lost connection with everything. And, you know, this year through the pandemic, you know, I'm seeing so many trends bubble up through the conversations I'm having around the world. And one of the things that I think has really come to light this year is that we're finally understanding what matters. Through the pandemic, we're also finding that when we let go of judgment and find love, that's really where we come together as one.
Yes, because we realize that judgment doesn't mean a thing.
No.
You know, that what is so important to us is to be able to love, to be with people we love. And all of the things that, all of those surface things that Western culture had constructed to take our attention away from what is important. You know, and when we see now, I see in this country, so many millions of people who are living in poverty, who are hungry, and 17 million children who are hungry, and then being evicted. I mean, when we begin to see that, I mean, I, of course, was born in the Great Depression. You know, I heard those stories from my parents for sure, and I didn't feel it as a child, but I heard the stories of that. But I also heard about how people helped each other. I remember people coming to the back door and my mother would always give some food. But you begin to realize that in this case, I am not hit by that. But it is it's for us to grieve that people are going through that. But it's also wonderful to see how many people are helping others, you know, and having places where they can get food.
Yeah, and it just boggles my mind that, you know, we're now in 2021 and this kind of stuff is still going on in our Western world, you know, like we're smart people. What the hell's going on, you know, like, and we can't get out of our own way to see another person is exactly the same as us. Like if we could just put our feet in their shoes.
Yes, yes. And I think many of us can. I think that the effect of a worldview in which we're nothing, and so, well, let me get what I can out of it while I am alive, that there are many people who are in that place. And I think of them as very wounded people. But when we, if we follow the money, in a case like this, we can see that money has shifted dramatically from the middle class to the 1%. Trillions of dollars have gone to billionaires. Something wrong with that organization. And I think as we wake up, we see it as our work to be conscious of that and see that people who want to snatch and grab and control us, ultimately, have been deeply wounded. And if they had gone inward, they wouldn't need that in the outer world. If we can understand them and also be smart enough to reorganize so that that does not happen. But we have to recognize that. And, you know, I think it's so important to say that when that shaman mystics were also scientists. The most natural thing in the world is when we experience another world is that we want to understand, how does that work? How does, what about nature? How does it all work? So many of them were scientists. We now know that the Egyptian culture had a very profound science. And one of the Renaissance periods of the shaman mystic scientist was in 1600 in Europe, what is called the Rosicrucian Enlightenment. But the church stopped that. I mean, in 20 years, they caught what was going on, and that was over. And their manuscripts, their research was destroyed or taken to the Vatican. And many of those people working together had to kind of tuck tail and go home. And a few years later, the Royal Society for Science in England was developed. They knew that they could not study anything about the inner world or consciousness, because they would be killed. And this is the influence of the church, which is supposed to be about spirit. But we can't blame the scientists that we have a material science. They could not do anything else and live. And we've come full circle in the 20th century with quantum physics, is that they couldn't go any further in science unless they went inward. So, but that is, we are paying a huge price. A huge price for that nothingness and the materiality. And we have a group of people within our species who've been tremendously damaged by that. And money and power are what they are substituting for the inner empowerment.
Yeah, and to live a life that way, wow, it's such an empty, meaningless way, isn't it, really?
It is, and it allows us to think, well, let's just put a few chips in our head and make ourselves worthy. But I think that there can be some real danger in that kind of, that particular path in artificial intelligence, because it's not understanding that we have the power to be in touch with the quantum field. I mean, we are just beginning to realize the power that we could have. And far beyond anything that AI could give us, I think it could work as a partner, but not unless the who we are is known and experienced. And we've got a way to go with that.
Yeah, there's still so much to explore, isn't there?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, Betty, I'm curious to ask you this question, because there is no wrong answer. Can you define for us what being ethical means to you?
Yeah. Well, I think that, as I said before, once we have the experience that we're not separate individuals, that we are one mind playing wonderfully individual roles in creating our own worlds, but we can only really create if we co-create. And I think once we understand the oneness of it all, then we know we better be ethical. Otherwise, no one's going to play with us.
Yeah.
You know? We won't have a game to play. And so I think it is behaving in a way that nurtures my growth and development and others, the growth and development of those around me with whom I'm in touch. So it's keeping a focus on what is nurturing to each of us.
Oh, I love that.
And once we know that, we'll want to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, what everything you're saying all comes back to my mission, you know, and how I describe that. And it just, it's blowing my mind. So what are you working on at the moment, Betty? Are there any more books in the works, or what are your plans for this year?
Well, I just, of course, finished last year at Merchants of Light, The Consciousness That Is Changing the World. And I'm really hoping to, I really want to tell as many people as possible about our history, who we naturally attempt to become when we're not suppressed, that it is in our nature to develop all of the aspects, all of the components of the brain, and connect them with heart, the heart, and live in that way. And our ancestors wanted us to know, and they left this heritage in so many places and in so many ways, that they wanted us to know that we're immortal. They knew that. They wanted us to know that. And they wanted us also to know that we're divine. Everything that is one, and it's divine. Everything in the Big Bang is divine, and we're all in our process of becoming, and we are also creators. So that was what they wanted us to know, and that would be what I would want to tell people, that our ancestors knew and wanted us to know. And I want myself to know that, and I do know that now, and I want to understand it better every day, and to create in harmony with that great field of love. And I think we're learning how to do it better and better.
So this year you're really going to be spreading the word then?
I think, you know, I was thinking of, people are so many different things. I'm just a teacher.
Yeah.
You know? I taught on the college level for many years, and I taught myth and symbolic language, fairy tale, because these literary structures are actually organized by these inner organizing principles of our evolution. And so I was learning, the students were learning, we had a great time. This was in the 60s and 70s, and we were just learning together and having a great time. And I love to do that. I love to, whatever I discover, I want to tell someone else.
Yeah.
And so I want to get this year, and I don't know how long, I do want to, I hope people read the book, because I took 16 years in researching and writing it and trying to express it in a way that would be understandable of who we are and what our potential is. And for example, one thing that I learned was that in the Kalahari Desert, the San Bushmen actually had experienced cosmic consciousness. They knew how to do it. And we didn't, we looked down on people who lived in the desert with no possessions. We had no idea that the San Bushmen had a deep and profound spiritual tradition, and that they say they've been at that for 60,000 years. Archaeologists and anthropologists only know maybe 35,000 years. I think they may have been before the cave cultures.
Mm.
But there was an American who actually, through a vision, had contact with them, and through him, Bradford Keeney, we know that they actually constantly dance and together to achieve this higher state of consciousness. And when Bradford Keeney told them that in India people sit alone to achieve this consciousness, they thought, oh no, not alone. I mean, their whole idea was, this is communal. Mm. We touch, we hold, we dance together, and we experience this Christ consciousness. They wouldn't call it that, but it's this consciousness of the cosmos. I didn't know that before, and that was a wonderful thing to know, that given if we could go our own way, we would find this. Mm. If we're not suppressed. And Western culture is a result of a profound suppression and repression of what we are potentially able to be.
Oh, wow. Just, it blows my mind. You know, I could just sit and talk to you all day. Now, Betty, if people want to find out more about you and they want to get a hold of your books, where can they go?
Well, they can get the books from any bookstore that sells, or place that sells books and ebooks, but they can also get it from Kamlak, KAMLAK.com. That name also came from a vision.
It
Comlock Center. And Kimberly Saavedra, who is my publisher, is also the director of that center. So they could go to that center to order the books. And there's also a sample chapter that from Merchants that she will send out, if you would just like that.
Yeah. So Camlack.com, is that right?
Yes, K-A-M-L-A-K. And notice that the two middle letters, M-L, Merchants of Light.
Ah.
I didn't know that when we formed it. I was in a vision that I was being told that was the right name. And look at M-L. And the first is Ka, which is breathing out, and Ah, coming back in. And in the middle is the Merchants, or they're also miracle lovers or masters of life, masters of love. So I feel that I've worked with those entities in the spirit world, and they even got the title of the company.
See, nothing's ever what it seems, is it?
It seems like it, yes.
You know, and we've been talking about visions, and you know, anybody who's listened to this podcast or has worked with Ethical Change Agency would know that the whole mission behind what I do and the vision for where we're headed all came from a vision. I had a vision of a premises that basically had a recording studio, a video studio. It had all these consulting rooms and, you know, where people who were ethical business owners or holistic healers could come in and create content or consult and then go on their merry way. And it was global. It could be wherever they are. And in the vision, I saw a neon sign, and it was the brand on the wall. And there was an A with a circle around it, you can see it on the wall.
Yes.
And
yes.
So I created the brand from the vision.
Oh, that's so incredible. I mean, that's just incredible and beautiful. And we know we're in harmony with that other dimension when that happens, don't we? And every one of us has. We've come for a purpose.
Mm.
We have something in us to give to the world, and it's getting in touch with it like that. That's beautiful.
And I think it's not having the fear, and it's allowing it to come through, I think, is the thing that you really need to do, because it got down to a granularity that I'd drawn out a floor plan in detail and had a team and everything. And just, this week I was talking to a friend and who I'd originally shared the vision with, and I realized that the next step of the vision had already happened. And I just went, oh, okay, that happened. So, I think we really have to pay attention to that kind of stuff, because it can change your whole life.
Oh, it can. Mm. And we've been taught to ridicule it, don't pay attention. Or, for instance, this knowledge from the quantum field, from the other field, comes to us through the heart. And so that's intuition. We may not know the logical process of getting to that, but when we have that deep intuition, that is that consciousness coming to us. And people have made fun of it for generations. That's just women's intuition, and don't pay attention to that. Just give us the facts. So we've been trained, we've been brainwashed. Do ignore that. Do not pay attention to it. And now we're awakening to, it's exactly what I should pay attention to.
Mm, yeah, and to the point now where I actually get messages, and they're actually for other people. So I'll share it with them, and they'll be just like, how did you know that? Or, well, I need to use that, or, you know, and I'm just like, it comes through, and I'm like, well, that's for you. Do what you will.
That is really, really wonderful.
It's very cool.
So
it makes my life a lot easier, I can tell you.
Well, you know you're in harmony with that creative force.
Mm. Yeah, and I wouldn't change it for anything, to be honest with you.
Oh, no.
Mm.
No, we don't want that other life.
Now, Betty, I've got the last big question for you, and I can't wait to hear your answer. What's the change you'd like to see in the world, and how can we bring it to life?
Yes, well, I think the changes that we're talking about, the changes you've gone through and that I've gone through, and the coming to awareness that there is an evolutionary principle at work in each of us and in the world, that our planet has a purpose, and it's its purpose is in alignment with the universe. And when we begin to realize that, we can align our purposes with the greater purpose of our planet and the cosmos. And we know that when just what you were talking about starts happening, that we're in alignment. So I think that I would want us to know that we are how many billions of years of evolution of being able to co-create with the universe. We now have that capacity, and we've sort of thrown it aside for the last several centuries. And now we need to pick that up and realize we are co-creators in the universe. And every thought, everything we say ripples throughout the whole universe. We know that now. We are powerful beings. And if we would allow that power to be guided by the heart, we can do anything. And we can do anything together.
Amen. Oh, Betty, I can't thank you enough for being a part of the ethical evolution. Thank you.
Well, I'm so glad to meet you and know what you're doing and hear about it. It's wonderful. And I just wish you the best success in the world.
Thank you.
Which you will have.
I will. Thanks for listening to the Ethical Evolution Podcast. If you're an ethical business owner, change maker, or holistic healer who's determined to make a change in the world and you need support to spread your message, visit ethicalchangeagency.com to collaborate.
Miles, are you ready to record our promo for season 2 of the Wanna Bet podcast?
David, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Miles, we're not here to quote lines from Airplane. We're here to tell people that season 2 starts August 18th.
But I like Airplane.
I know you do, but Wanna Bet is a sports betting podcast. Each week we bet $1,000 on the NFL teams and games that we love.
Well, that sounds like fun.
It is fun. And last year you picked over 60% of your games correctly.
How'd you do?
We're not talking about that. We are telling people that they can find us every Friday. So no more movie quotes.
Roger, Roger.
Electric Acid.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Peter.
We're the founders of Electricast Media, bringing you great podcasts like Nightmare Road Stories, Tech Talk Revolution, and Bodacious Minds.
Electricast networks include Ruby for female empowerment, the Best Business Network, and GPN for geopolitics. We built this company to create community and amplify diverse voices, and we really appreciate your support.
So, keep listening to Electricast podcasts and hear the culture.
Electricast. Electric acid.